Welcome to the Kaiju Transmissions podcast. Again, I am Kyle Bird, and with me is...
I'm Matt Parmley.
All right, there we go. And this is our, I think our first, and probably last, due to a lack of content, Thanksgiving special.
Gobble, gobble.
Yeah. Really, there's not a whole lot. I mean, Halloween is easy because you got horror. Christmas.
We managed to find some relevant stuff last year for Christmas.
Yeah, and there's a couple ideas. Like when you get into, when you're doing a kaiju podcast for Christmas, I mean, we're going to be scraping the bottom of the barrel for content. But Thanksgiving, man, for any, like, I mean, there's not even a lot of Thanksgiving horror movies. There's maybe, like there's a tiny handful I can think of.
Well, there's Thanksgiving, obviously. Yeah. Parts 1 and 3.
There's a crazy Thanksgiving slasher movie from the 80s called Blood Rage.
Ah, yeah, I have heard of that one.
Where the guy, when he kills people, he keeps saying it's not cranberry sauce. For some reason, it's pretty insane. But there's just, I don't know, and it's a shame, you know. I think Thanksgiving is one of the better holidays for me anyway.
Is that because of the food?
Yeah, and the lack of presents keeps it stress free.
Yeah, I guess that's a good point. What are your family traditions? Do you have those? Like, do you have a set thing that you do every year?
Well, usually my mom makes dinner, and like me and my brother will go to her house. But now that like we're old and we have families too, like my brother usually does his own thing on his wife's side of the family. And then like he'll swing by my mom's for dessert, and then like I don't know. I usually go to my mom's anyway, but this year she had foot surgery, so she's not cooking. So I'm going to go to my girlfriend's family's Thanksgiving, which is like, it's a bummer because, like, I don't know. I just like being at my mom's house on Thanksgiving. But now I pretty much just dick around, watch Mystery Science Theater and stuff.
Yeah, every year for our Thanksgiving, since I've been married, we basically have had two Thanksgiving feasts every year. So we do Sarah's side of the family first, and then we do my side of the family second. So we're doing the same thing this year. And it's a bit bittersweet this year because my sister, she married a naval officer, and he's going to get deployed right around Christmas time. So this will be, like, I'm sure we're going to still see him, you know, enough, but, like, it's the one holiday before they're about to leave, and, yeah, that'll be interesting. But every year, two Thanksgiving feasts, man. And my wife's family, they can cook. There'll be a smorgasbord of food. But I have another relevant question. How do you feel about Black Friday basically becoming Black Thursday? Like, places opening up at 5 o'clock or 6 p.m. on Thanksgiving.
I mean, I did it a few times, and I don't know, like, I would have fun going to the mall at, like, 2 in the morning, like, more or less just because it's, like, a weird experience. Like, I never, like, the couple times I went, like, I didn't really get anything. But, like, but now I'm starting to, like, it's all online now, so I'm, like, not really understanding, why it's still such a big thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very valid point. I know my parents, when Nintendo 64 came out, and this is going way back, my dad stood in line for like, I think 5 or 6 hours, and he got the last one year for us for Christmas. And like some lady behind him was also looking for one and she didn't get it. So I was like, dang, I mean, that's some sacrifice on the part of parents, but now we got it easy. We can kind of shop online. Although I guess not everything is online. There's some stuff you have to go into the store, and then you got to be prepared for fist fights to happen, man. The people are nuts.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just so weird that stuff like that still happens when you can You can just order anything online, and
you got the last video game for $10 less than you can buy it for normally. I'm going to punch you in the face. That's how this works.
The first time something like that happened that I remember is Tickle Me Elmo.
Oh, dude, people were crazy for the Tickle Me Elmo
thing. I know before that, like, I think Cabbage Patch Kids, when they came out, it might have been, like, the first thing like that, but I was a little too young to remember all the insanity. But, yeah, I remember the news stories and stuff of people, like, killing each other for a damn Elmo.
Well, there's this, when I worked at Circuit City, rest in peace, when I worked at Circuit City, we obviously carried all the video game systems. When PS2 came out, this guy was walking out with like two systems, and some dude in a car pulled up, and he had been waiting for somebody to do this, obviously. He gave the guy $800 a system for a system that sold for $400. He gave him $800 a system so that he didn't have to wait in line.
I don't know. I would do the, like, what are you thankful for stuff, but, like, I feel like everyone's answer is the same. People are thankful for their friends and their family and stable employment. And, like, what else is there? Like, you know, like, what else are you going to... How else is someone going to answer that question?
Yeah, I actually hated the going around the room and saying something. I always feel awkward about it because I'm with you. It's like, I'm thankful for my family. I just really want to eat the food and go take a nap on the couch. That's what I'm there for Thanksgiving for. My Thanksgiving is napping on a couch, falling asleep to football. That's what I want to do every year. And I hope I can continue that Parmley tradition.
Yeah. Now, do you ever do the Mystery Science Theater marathon?
I mean, no, mainly because it's like nobody else is going to be interested in that.
Yeah,
most people.
Yeah, and this year they got the Mystery Science Theater. Well, they did the Mystery Science Theater last week, and I think they're going to restream it next week or this. Yeah, this week. I mean, and then they're also dropping the new season.
Yeah,
and so
six,
like,
episodes,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, and so that's insane. And then at the same time, Shudder is doing the Joe Bob Briggs marathon also.
So many cool things to watch.
Yeah, but everyone's family has to be dumb and want to, like,
spend time together.
Yeah, they don't want to watch dumb shit on TV like we do.
About holidays, the stress part of it is you go and you do all the family stuff, and then you're so tired from that. Even though you eat great and you get to talk to people and stuff, you're like, you come home and you're so tired, and then if you have to get up like at 6 a.m. go into work the next day, it's like, ugh.
Yeah, man, it's the worst.
People probably listen to this thinking, man, these guys suck.
Well,
we kind of do, Bert. It's fine. Just acknowledge it.
Thanksgiving. Well, we have two things to discuss. Our main event is going to be the giant claw, because he's a big bird, and it's also a real turkey of a movie, Matt.
Yeah, I mean it. Oh God, that plan killed me, bro. I'm broken.
Anyway. So yes, and I think we've had a few requests for this. I think
we have.
Yeah, we'll be getting into the complete nonsense that is the giant claw. Also, I don't know. Okay, so the other thing we're gonna do is Legends of Tomorrow, the DC series on the CW, did a kaiju episode about Ishiro Honda, and that was also the Thanksgiving special for that show this season. So yeah, after this, I mean, we've exhausted all our Thanksgiving potential, I think. But the Legends of Tomorrow thing is weird because it aired last night, and granted, I actually like the CW shows, but I pretty much just stick to Supergirl, Flash, and Arrow. Legends I gave up on after two seasons. I get it. I don't watch the show anymore, so I didn't know this was coming. But usually, like, I don't know, some website or something would be like, oh, hey, they're doing this, you know, in a couple weeks or something. But no, I didn't hear, I knew nothing of this until yesterday morning, which was really strange. And the whole experience of this episode, me learning about this episode and watching this episode, just feels like a big dream. And a lot of that is also due to just how bizarre that episode is. But but yeah, it was just really strange. August Ragone made a post on Facebook about this actor that was playing Ishiro Honda in an episode of Legends. And I immediately thought, like, oh, that's probably going to be, like, oh, later this season. Like, they're filming it now. And then it's like, oh, no, it airs tonight. And I'm like, what? Why? Where? Why did no one, like, know about this until now? Anyway, so we're going to be talking about that. And yeah, that's Thanksgiving for kaiju fans, basically. But
strap in, folks. Although there is a Power Rangers has, like, that one turkey monster. I can't remember the name of the monster. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I think so.
There's also, like, Birdon from Ultraman.
Yeah, yeah, as far as movies, like, I was thinking about that. I was like, is the Giant Claw, like, really the only, like, giant bird that starred in a movie? And I know there's got to be a couple others here and there, but it's like, yeah, birds don't get a whole lot of love from the genre, especially, birds that, like, are the starring attraction. Even just flying monsters in general. Usually these giant monsters are from the sea or from outer space. They're not like something like the Giant Claw.
Well, there's Turkey Jerk, which if you do your Google foo, if you see a picture of this thing, it is ridiculous looking. It's like a giant ball with a turkey head on top of it.
The hell are you talking about?
I was talking about Power Rangers.
Again. Oh, okay. Is that really
the name of Turkey Jerk? Is the monster's name? Don't man. It's on Wiki. It's got to be true, right?
But no one cares about flying. Like, Rodan is the only, like, kaiju that is, like, of, like, in Toho that, like, the that is like.
Are you? What?
I'm trying to. I'm having a stroke. But you have, like, Rodan, Ghidorah, and Mothra. Rodan's the only one that's had his own movie. Like, I don't know. Maybe people just think movies about flying
Mothra
creatures.
Mothra had its own movie? Her own movie?
Yes. This is true.
What is...
I don't know. That's an insect. I'm thinking, like, bird and bird-type creatures.
Yeah, I mean, Rodan's the only one that really... I guess Gappa, technically, is a kind of...
Sort of? I don't know.
Sort of thing, and then... Yeah, man. There is slim pickings on the bird side.
I don't know. Gulala is kind of like a chicken.
Space chicken, yeah.
Yeah.
I would say that GMK Ghidorah...
Yeah, it looks like a chicken, yeah. All right, so let's go ahead with Legends of Tomorrow. This is the first episode I've watched... since the end of season 2, but I think I was able to pick things up considerably. So I'll give the plot synopsis. I guess first we should tell people, like, what the show's about, because there's probably a lot of people that don't know what it's about. So
I'm gonna you do all that.
I'll try my best.
I watched one season of it, and I quit immediately after that. It just was not.
So it's a spin-off. Well, technically Arrow was the first show, and then they did Flash, and I don't remember if Supergirl or Legends came first, but regardless, they all spun off from Arrow. And Legends of Tomorrow always stuck out as, like, the redheaded stepchild, because the other shows are fairly grounded in, you know, I don't know, not necessarily realistic, but the storytelling is grounded, and it they go through measures to establish rules and this and that. And Arrow is, yeah, that's like kind of like the Batman of the bunch, where it's, you know, it's more gritty, crime driven. But then you get into Flash, and it gets into sci-fi. But then Legends of Tomorrow comes along, and it's not based on another comic book. It just kind of throws together different side characters to like fill out the team. So it's about a team of superheroes who essentially they time travel when they detect an anomaly in the timeline. So a lot of the times it's another time traveler that they have to go and stop and make sure like history is on the same course. That's the best way I can explain the general idea. So yeah, you get episodes where they're in the 30s, the 40s, the Old West, the Civil War, the et cetera, et cetera. And very often they run into a historical figure of some sort, and there's some kind of mishap, and something the legends do either inspires that figure or ensures that figure's later history. And the reason I really gave up on the show was because, like, that's a pretty insane premise for a superhero show, but I always felt like it was just playing it too straight and too, like, no one was really... They were trying to make it, like, a real show. You know, like, my favorite episodes were the ones that were like so stupid that they were like fun. Like when the show like knew what it was and like leaned into almost like comedy goofy territory, that's when it worked for me. But like there was always like one or two episodes like that in a season, and like the one episode in the first season that I really liked, I think it was the first season, but anyway, it was the one where they went to the Old West and they met Jonah Hex for the first time. And that episode was just so like insane and dumb, but like, it was like a tongue in cheek kind of dumb that I was like, oh, okay. Like this is fun. And last season, there were a lot of reviews and stuff that were saying like, oh, the show finally understands what it is. And, even in our message thread on Facebook, you might have seen me and Trev like, should we go back? And no. And so...
I feel like that's a conversation that you and Trev have had like over and over again.
Yeah.
And
but yeah, like the conceit was like, okay, season 3 is where it found its footing and like, it's basically just a dumb time travel sitcom with superheroes. And so,
yeah, that's an accurate description.
Yeah. And so like, I was like, kind of like, oh, maybe I'll check out a couple episodes, but I never really got there last season. So then this season I check out this episode and I'm not quite sold on the idea of diving back in, but I can say that what I just said, a dumb, goofy sitcom about time traveling superheroes, that is basically what this episode is.
Yes.
So, I might as well just stick with it, and then I'll go to general thoughts. I'll have you go first since I've been talking a while. But so the idea of this is in 1951, Ishiro Honda is making a movie, and he sees a octopus tentacle come out of the sea, and then the legends see it on their ship and they're like, oh, we got to go to 1951 because this thing isn't supposed to be there, it shouldn't be part of the timeline. So they go and they have to set history back on track. So our team now there's only a couple characters that I'm really familiar with. So we have Sarah Lance, who was introduced in Arrow. She is the White Canary. She is basically the leader of the team. You still have Ray, who is the Atom, who doesn't use his powers in this, but he's like the DC version of Ant-Man, basically. Heatwave, who is a former criminal. He was introduced on The Flash, and he is now one of the legends, and his thing is he has guns that shoot fire, basically. Those are the only three from the original team that are left that I knew. But we are also joined by a woman. I think her name is Zara, but this is the first episode of anything in this show that I've seen her in. I do remember when she was cast, though, because she was, like, the first Muslim-American superhero on TV. But in this, they don't call her... In the comics, her... The name is outdated. In the comics, her name is Isis.
And, that would be... Muslim Isis in the show would not
yeah, it, well, I mean, when the character was created, Isis was in reference to, you know, the goddess, the mythological goddess.
Yeah,
it was probably for the best that that they did not go with her superhero name for the show. And then we have Constantine, who had his own series. I still want to watch. It got canceled, but I heard good things about it. And then they later brought him onto Arrow. And I really like the guy that plays him. We have Constantine. He's basically a supernatural, like, film noir character, essentially. And then we have another character that I am not familiar with named Charlie, but it's the same actress that played Vixen before. And I had to, like, Google what was up with that. And I guess this is a character that was a time-traveling fugitive that they captured and, like, started working for them. And she shapeshifts, and I guess, like, she got stuck in the body of this other character. Oh, some goofy comic book stuff. So anyway, Honda... sees the octopus, so the legends go to Toho, where he's filming a war movie, so there's miniature sets everywhere, and so they meet with him, and it turns out that he got a hold of what's called the Book of Brigid, which is, I guess, in, like, there's some sort of mythology that book actually comes from, but essentially you write or draw a story in it, and that thing comes to life. And Honda, having these issues mentally with getting over the A-bomb, he makes this story of a giant octopus named Tagumo. Tagumo, I guess, is how
I pronounce it. I screwed that up again. No shock. Yeah, Tagumo, that's right.
And Tagumo, at the end of the story, he wins. He destroys Tokyo, everyone's dead, and that's that. And, you know, that was Honda putting his grief from the war into a story. Now, what this book does is it will manifest that into something physical. So Tagumo comes to life and starts destroying the city, and they have to find a way to stop him. Unfortunately, Honda, now that he's purged this from his system, he can't come up with a way to end it. And then there's I don't know if this is carried over from previous episodes this season, but for some reason, Mick, Heatwave, is trying to write a fantasy novel. Which, I get the joke is like, oh, the dumb meathead guy is a novelist. I just don't know if that was, like, recurring from another episode or what. And he's kind of having writer's block, but him and Honda, Heatwave... Just describing this sounds like I'm on drugs or something.
Yeah, it does.
Heatwave and Ashiro Honda, he's inspired by Honda to create a solution for this problem. And when we get into the reviews, we'll talk about how insane that is. I guess that's where we'll go into spoiler territory. That's the overall plot. And there's some subplots, like, one of them is, Citizen Steel. He was another hero. I guess now he works for the Time Bureau, who I guess the legends kind of report to. The Bureau was introduced in the season I missed, so I have no idea, like, the ins and outs, but they kind of oversee them. And he was one of the heroes on the team last season. Now he works for this Bureau. And there's a side story about him trying to have Thanksgiving dinner with his family, but the containment unit at their headquarters, which contains a chupacabra, a Baba Yaga, and some kind of wolfman creature, they break loose, and so he has to leave his family on Thanksgiving and like make up excuses, and that in itself is insane. That was my struggling to piece all that together, because it's all crazy. It's all dumb and crazy. So I'm going to take a breather. While I do that, Matt, you can talk about your overall takeaways from this episode.
Yeah. Listen, there's a reason why I stopped watching after one season, and I feel like this episode contains a lot of those things. But what I did like about it, I thought the Honda stuff was fun. I mean, the fight with the miniatures sequence, basically what ends up happening is the monster ends up fighting the creature brought to life by the guy that I can't remember the dude's name now, the meathead who tries to finish Honda's story or recreate the ending. And so he creates a 3-boobied woman to slay the monster.
Yeah, it's like a purple warrior, like Xena warrior princess kind of. Yeah, it's like a generic fantasy.
It's her, but character. Like from Total Recall.
Right. Yeah.
So and then after she defeats the monster, they go and have sex. It's bizarre.
Yeah, in the ruins of the miniature city. Yeah.
There's some cool stuff. Like at the beginning of the thing, they show, you know, samurai fighting as being like part of this thing, and it's kind of a cool touch. And then they have,
yeah, they show like some of the other movies, like sets and stuff.
Yeah, I assume. Yeah, and then they have like they're filming, you know, the Pearl Diver movie, which is the Blue Pearl, which is one of the first films that Honda actually did direct. And then, they show Honda filming special effects, which obviously that's not what he did. So if you're looking for like historical accuracy, this isn't.
No, this ain't the place. No.
But it's a dumb show. They're not trying to make it more than it is. What I hate about this episode, though, are all the dumb subplots, especially the Thanksgiving subplot with the because you find out later on that the monsters broke free, and the reason they're so filled with rage and angst is because they are hangry.
Yeah.
What better way to calm monsters down than have a Thanksgiving dinner? It's so stupid.
No, yeah. I mean, when I say sitcom, I do mean like
it is legit.
Yeah, it really is dumb, wacky sitcom humor. Like, it's not sophisticated in the least. There's the guy working there, Gary. He orders Chinese, and I think he's like trying to like get with the girl that delivers it, and then but it turns out she's read a ton of fantasy books, so she knows like what these creatures eat, so they find a place that'll do takeout on Thanksgiving, and they have to go and give it to the freaking chupacabra and the whatever, like
it's bad. I mean, it runs that weird line between some of the sequences are kind of played very straight face, and then others are just not. And there's that weird, and the actors, honestly, they're not great. I mean, they're just not for some of the stuff. So that's, I don't know. The show itself, like I said, there's a reason I stopped watching. But if you want to watch a tribute that tries to do some service to Honda, I think this tries. And I think that they paid attention to some stuff, like the way that Honda is dressed is very much reminiscent of the pictures that we see him in. So stuff like that, I mean, it's kind of neat. I thought the battle was fine. Like, I thought that was kind of fun.
Yeah, and I think the monster, Tagumo, I mean, it's a giant octopus. It's not that amazing, but, I mean, it's serviceable for what it is. Yeah, I mean, the thing that Godzilla fans are going to be sticklers about is probably there's a lot of historical inaccuracy, but it's a sci-fi, time-traveling superhero show that's also a comedy. I mean, the thing is, they did it just to tell a fun story. I don't think they expect anyone to watch Legends of Tomorrow to learn about historical figures. Like, you know, if they meet Abraham Lincoln, they're not going to be like, oh, we need to make sure someone's going to need to learn about Abraham Lincoln by watching this. I think it's really just, you know, hey, we just wanted to tell a fun story. Because, yeah, so, Matt, you said Honda shooting the effects sequences. Yeah, we know he didn't do that. The giant octopus, I mean, that wasn't his idea. That was Tsuburaya. Godzilla in the very first stages of the production was conceived as a giant octopus. Stuff like that, you know, they're taking liberties with the history, which for a show like this, I don't necessarily mind. Although, you know, I mean, if I have one big complaint about how the Toho stuff is treated, you know, maybe include Tsuburaya as a supporting character and he has to work with Honda and the team. But I don't know. I mean, but that's also just more baggage, you know, so.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. Mick, the guy that finishes the story, at the end of the episode, he has this dialogue with Honda. He basically says, "Hey, forget the octopus stuff. Everybody loves lizards." I'm paraphrasing, but that's basically what he says. And then he talks about like a lizard king or something. And then Honda basically says, "King of the Monsters" in Japanese. So
yeah. Matt, I bet you didn't know Heat Wave gave Ishiro Honda the idea to make Godzilla.
What would we do without that guy?
Well, yeah, and that's another thing. Like, Godzilla wasn't really his idea. He contributed to the screenplay later on, but, you know, Godzilla wasn't, like, all him. You know, you had the screenwriters and Tsuburaya involved in that, too. But, I don't think the historical inaccuracies are coming out of a place of ignorance where someone just said, like, let's do a Godzilla episode. Who directed Godzilla? His name's Ishiro Honda. Okay, yeah, just throw him in there. Like, yeah. There is stuff, like, you see him directing the divers.
Yeah.
The Blue Pearl stuff, like, the octopus thing, like, I mean, the creature being an octopus before it was a dinosaur.
They obviously paid attention.
Yeah, I mean, that is, like, that does have a basis in reality. It's just not incredibly accurate. And I felt bad at this because I could tell the people making the show, like, cared and wanted to, you know, they wanted to do it justice, but like when they have the camera panning through the miniature sets,
yeah, they're
and you know, you see like little toy army men and like they roll like it's basically like a Hot Wheels car and
literally, no, it was a Hot Wheels
car. Yeah. and Honda's like, see, it's just like, he's like, we're like ants in this giant city. And like, I could tell, like, they were like being like, they were trying to basically say like, oh, look how cool this is. But man, whoever was in charge of that set design, I don't know what they were doing.
they should have cut that scene out. Cause its
heart was in the right place, but
it's almost like, well, you know, they don't really use little toy like dollar store army
right,
men,
right.
Like matchbox cars. That's not how this works. And there's like during the one thing I did like during the final battle with the three boobed woman and the octopus, she somehow manages, she like cuts the plane. The plane actually goes flying overhead and crashes. I thought that was kind of neat to make sure that like it would happen off stage. Like there's they paid attention to some stuff. So I thought that was kind of neat.
Yeah. I mean, that part where he's explaining tokusatsu, it was well intentioned, but it just visually, whoever did the set design could have done better.
Dude, we could have made something better than that. That's something we and my son have made little Godzilla movies with our own cardboard cities that were probably more convincing than that specific, you know, 10 seconds of a film.
Then there is one subplot that I didn't mention just because it seems like it's the biggest thing carried over from previous episodes. And Constantine is like, he's dying of some black magic sickness and Ray has to get the daughter of Damien Dark, who was the villain in Arrow season 4 and the last season of Legends, like, and she has to cure him. I didn't know what was going on with that just because I haven't been watching. But it was kind of a bummer that Constantine, who, like, when I heard that he was joining as a main addition to the team this season. That was like the one thing that made me want to like, oh, maybe I should watch it again. But yeah, he's sidelined for this whole thing, which was kind of a bummer for me. I will say, I mean, the guy that played Honda, I think, did a serviceable job. And I will say, like, the scene where he's explaining to them... Well, oh, that's another historical inaccuracy, but it's also a common thing is, you know, people talking about... It's always been history until Ed and Steve basically found out, hey, that's not true, and corrected it in their book, was Honda walking through the ruins of Hiroshima, which didn't happen. But this in this show, it did happen. That urban legend is, you know, in this show. And that's actually, the part where he's talking about that is actually kind of chilling. Because he says, like, oh, I was walking through the city, and I was wondering, where are the people? And he says, I stopped and I realized they're in my hair, they're on my clothes, they're in my lungs. And that just, like, that unsettled me. Even me. Like, I was like, oh, God, that's messed up.
Yeah, that was pretty rough.
Yeah, I mean the idea that the monster, in this case the Tagumo, was created to externalize, you know, the grief and, you know, just anxieties of the bomb. I mean, that's all, you know, true, as anyone listening to this knows that's basically what the 54 Godzilla is. But yeah, I mean, it was a, I can't say I didn't have fun watching this, but I don't know. I think like this is the capacity in which I'm okay watching Legends is like every season, like maybe there's an episode or two that I might check out. Like last season I watched, or not last season, I think it was either the second season or the third season. They did a similar episode with George Lucas, and that one was so bananas insane and just dumb that I was like, this is so bad, but it's also kind of amazing. but it's just watching this was like a fever dream because you have a mainstream show that's actually pretty popular. Like all these CW shows are popular. Paying tribute to a director that has like this small cult following, and no one's like, you know, people aren't, aside from like us, aren't obsessing over. And I don't know, maybe it's the fact that I learned about it and watched it in the same day. The whole thing felt like a dream. By the time I was watching Ishiro Honda filming a three-boobed woman fighting a giant octopus, and then after that, Heatwave from Legends of Tomorrow has sex with the woman in the ruins of the Toho set, and then walks outside, asks Ishiro Honda if three boobs was enough or if he should have four, and which Honda says three was fine, and then he tells him you should make him a lizard. That's the most insane like trajectory of a day, from finding out about that to the end of that episode, that I, you know, you just throw your hands up and say, you know what, how does life get any weirder?
So, I have two questions for you. The first one is this episode enough to pull you back in? Because it's not for me, but you might have a different answer.
Well, I mean, it's the same problem I had when, like, I started reading all these articles. Like, oh, Legends of Tomorrow finally knows what it should be. And, like, this episode is probably, like, what the show should be. It's really stupid. It's, like, lowbrow, basically sitcom humor. And every now and then they pay homage to something cool. But, like, can I hang with this for 15 to 20 episodes? I don't know. Part of the reason maybe this episode was so fun to me was because I haven't watched an episode in a year. So, like, so yeah, the absurdity of it, like, was kind of refreshing. But if I was watching something as dumb and silly as, you know, Hangry Monsters every week, my tolerance might shrink. But since it's just like, oh, this is like my time, my one or two times a year to check in on Legends, like, it was fun. So
how many three boobed women would you give this episode?
I would do a solid 3. With in mind that I'm evaluating just this episode, not the show. Like, the show would get like a 1.5, maybe a 2. This episode is probably like a 3. Like, if I were to tell someone to just watch it who hasn't watched the show before, so a lot of kaiju fans, I would say, hey, this is probably going to be like a 3 for you guys. Like, that's what I would give it. The thing that's going to be a hang up for fans is going to be the historical inaccuracies, but I mean, you shouldn't be going into Legends of Tomorrow expecting to learn anything. I think that the writers did their homework enough to where you can tell, you know, you see them filming the Blue Pearl, you see, you know, the octopus, you know, predating Godzilla being the big dinosaur, stuff like that.
I would give the show like a 1.5, and I have no interest in really ever watching another episode. I mainly watch this for the podcast and because it has a specific subject matter that I would probably be more interested in. Well, I would be more interested in this subject matter than like anything else they ever do. So I watch the show, and I would give it a 2.5. So it's a notch above the show itself. However, the same flaws are all present. You have the really slapshod comedic tint to it that doesn't always work. And for me, most of it falls flat on its face. The stuff in this episode that I do like works pretty well, which is all the Ishiro Honda stuff and the monster stuff. That's all enough fun to where like, oh, okay. I'm not upset that I watched the show. It didn't feel like a waste of time, but I have no desire to revisit the show as a whole.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. You know, and I mean, it's going to be like, if I hear they're doing something else cool, I mean, you know, that's when I'll check it out. I can't commit to it, you know? And you know, hey, it's just a dumb show that when I check in on it a couple times a year and it's just harmless fun, like I'm okay with that.
I don't think I could ever watch another episode again.
Like, I mean, it's definitely a little more self-aware than when I was watching it.
Yeah.
I think.
I don't know, man. The acting.
It knows what it is.
a piece of shit. It's bad.
But the thing is, it's basically, I mean, when I was watching it, it was trying to be this, like, serious sci-fi show. And, like, that's really not what it is right now.
Yeah, I mean, there's...
Which is to its benefit. I mean, I think when they lean into stupid, that's when it's entertaining.
But that's the only thing. I mean, think about that. You're giving the show as a whole a 1.5, and you're saying that the only way it can be fun is if
stupid in the campy sense can be good. And I mean, ever since last season, that's supposed to be like, the show's been getting rave reviews the last couple seasons because, like, yeah, it's just leaning into camp territory. Right. But when I was watching it, that's not what it was. Every now and then you'd get some of that, and that's when I actually like was on board. But you know, I mean, if every episode's like this, you know, I mean, I would at least be able to safely say, like, oh, the show's found its footing and it knows what kind of show it is.
Yeah, I mean, it's fun. I think monster fans are going to do too. They're either going to love it and they're going to think it's fun, or they're going to hate it and they're going to hate the inaccuracies. They're going to think it's disrespectful to the fandom and all that other stuff.
Well, I don't think that.
Oh man, there's gonna be somebody. Watch, there'll be hate posts tomorrow about it, I'm sure.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't know why anyone would even try to take this seriously. I just don't. I mean, it's dumb, and if you allow it to be, it'll be fun. But I mean, don't be looking at this as something that's trying to give you a history lesson or something, because that's not what it is.
Actually, that don't be that guy.
Yeah, that's not what it is.
So, I think we've wrapped that part up. I think we want to talk about our next main event.
Ooh, the giant claw. And what an event.
Yeah, the monster is so awesome, guys, that they don't even put the monster's face on the poster. For good reason, mind you, but...
Because it's so scary.
Oh my gosh!
If anyone listening to this podcast probably knows the giant claw,
I would think so.
I mean, it's notorious
I mean, it was on TV all the time.
It's notorious for being what's probably the stupidest giant monster movie with the silliest giant monster ever. What's interesting, though, is the giant claw. You know, there's not a whole lot of movies about giant birds, so it kind of has an interesting place. I mean, Rodan isn't really a bird, you know. And, you know, you have your ultra kaiju and stuff, but yeah, there's not a whole lot of movies just about a giant bird. I don't know why. Maybe people don't think birds are scary enough. I don't know. Or maybe they all saw this movie and were afraid to even try. They're like, we can't risk anything like this happening ever.
Yeah, I mean, we were kind of listing off the bird stuff. So we had like kind of Gappa. We talked about Galala kind of looking like a chicken. You mentioned the Birdon from Ultraman. Power Rangers has like chicken jerk or something. there's some weird bird monster there. I mean, there's stuff like that, but nothing. I mean, outside of like Rodan.
And furthermore, there's no other giant bird that has it's the star of its own movie. You know, I mean, that's not common. Yeah, usually these monsters are from space or the sea, and the flying monsters are usually like Rodan or a dragon or something like that. But so the giant claw, infamous, and in many circles, a comedy classic. So the giant claw has an interesting history. There's a couple key names we're gonna have to run through. The most important is probably a producer named Sam Katzman, who did a lot of B movies. This is one of many B movies he did for Columbia, and his motto was basically to, you know, make the movie as cheap as possible. So you can get it in under schedule and under budget, and make, you know, lots of money off of something really cheap. A lot of the movies he made are better than this, including one called The Werewolf, which is a cheap werewolf movie, but it's kind of fun. Creature with the Atom Brain, and then two Harryhausen movies. It Came from Beneath the Sea, which I think definitely shows his cheapness. Remember, that's the one where Harryhausen couldn't even have an octopus with eight legs.
It was like six legs.
Yeah, right? He had to have six just to cut on animation costs. In Earth versus the Flying Saucers, which that, in my opinion, is a classic. You know, it's a really tight and well done invasion movie, directed by the same director as the Giant Claw. Fred F. Sears also did Earth versus the Flying Saucers and some other B movies, again also all better than the Giant Claw. But the Giant Claw is what happens when supposedly this movie was shot in 9 days. So this is what happens when someone has to shoot a movie in 9 days and you don't have Harryhausen effects. In fact, legend has it that Harryhausen was in talks or talked about to do the effects for the Giant Claw, and that's going to vary depending on who you listen to. Some people say that he declined because of other commitments. Some people say that Katzman himself decided not to use Ray because he wanted to save on production costs, and as we know, stop motion is a very expensive, very time-consuming process. In my history, this isn't what happened, but what I like to think is that Harryhausen looked at the script and said, "What the hell is this?" Because this is one of the most bizarre giant monster movies you can find, and the whole thing is nonsense, not just the silly looking monster, which is so goofy that it just makes the rest of the movie inherently sillier. As you said, Matt, the monster is hidden from the poster. The actual reason for that is that I don't think they let the poster artist see the monster. Not only that, but they didn't let the cast see the monster either. So instead of going with, you know, Harryhausen Animation or someone who knows what they're doing, they outsourced the effects stuff to be built by a Mexican puppet factory, some kind of Mexican company. And, you know, the whole time Sam Katzman is telling the cast and the crew, like, guys, just keep, you're doing great, keep acting your ass off. When you see this monster, it's going to look so great. It's going to look so real. Like, it's going to be so scary. You just kept telling them this thing's going to look amazing. And then when the movie came out, it was a different story. And poor Jeff Morrow, he often liked to attend, you know, openings of movies in his hometown where people knew him as an actor in movies. And so he'd hang out in the lobby and talk to people. And he took his family to see The Giant Claw. And when the monster came on screen, everyone laughed. And he just told his family, "I'll be in the car." and so after the movie, his family met him in the car, and he went home and he basically just drank himself to sleep that night. And I feel bad for the poor guy, but who can blame him?
Yeah, I mean, if you're gonna drink, this is definitely a good reason to do it.
And I mean, there's definitely, you know, the Giant Claw drinking game, which anytime someone says that it's like a flying battleship, anytime someone compares it to a battleship, which is already a weird comparison, you drink.
Yeah, you're drunk 20 minutes into that, by the way.
Oh yeah, there's everyone in this movie says he's like a flying battleship. I don't know why. I have no idea. None at all. Of all the things you could compare it to, why a battleship? Battleships don't even fly.
Yeah, I don't. What do you look like? And the first thing you think about for a giant bird is a battle. I don't know. I don't have an answer for that. I would have a better one if I were also drinking, because I feel like for this, well, I'm getting ahead of myself. We'll talk about that during the review.
Yeah, but yes, the battleship thing, it's just one in a series of confusing and strange decisions that this movie makes. So Matt, I'm going to pass the baton to you to do a plot breakdown for us of The Giant Claw.
Oh, you ain't ready, Bird. So Mitch McAfee, played by Morrow, is a aeronautical engineer. He's doing a radar test at the beginning of the film, and I guess they're in the North Pole, and he spots a UFO on the radar. Three fighter jets are basically dispatched right away, and they don't find anything, and radar doesn't detect anything, but one of the aircraft goes missing, and that kind of pisses off the officials, and they're blaming McAfee over the loss of the pilot and everything, and they believe it's some sort of hoax. Which doesn't make sense in itself, because a plane goes missing. And anyway, McAfee meets a mathematician, Sally, and I wouldn't say hit it off. What I would say is McAfee relentlessly pursues her for most of the movie in a very uncomfortable fashion. More on that probably in a little bit. And she's kind of helping him find out what's going on. At one point, their aircraft actually is attacked by the UFO. They actually crash land. Their pilot dies. They end up running into Pierre, who's he's a farmer. And so they go inside Pierre's house, and they tell him their story about this flying battleship attacking their plane, but nobody actually sees it. And later on, there's animals screaming outside the farm, and he goes out there and he realizes that his animals are now missing. And of course, they're subject to being eaten by the giant claw. And then from there, it kind of spirals out of control even further, where they start listing attacks of other planes, and there's mentions of ships being attacked. And Mr. McAfee pulls out this awesome map, and he makes X's for where all the attacks were. And they're talking about how there's no pattern to these attacks. Well, McAfee sees something that nobody else in the right mind would see, and he starts drawing this big spiral on the map. And he says, a pattern. And Sally looks at him and is like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. So we later learn that it is theorized this bird is from outer space, and it comes from a planet full of antimatter or something. That whole thing kind of comes out of nowhere towards
he's from another dimension, from an antimatter dimension.
There we go. Yeah, that's, I mean, you know, it's the same. It's essentially the same. So they figure out a way to, when they're attacking him, they talk about how they've actually attacked him with A-bombs and stuff, and nothing seems to be working, and they theorize, well, this antimatter thing is basically preventing us from attacking him, so they have to defeat that somehow, and they come up with this isotope that basically gets rid of the antimatter shield and allows the monster to be attacked. And once that happens, he is successfully brought down. What I left out, there's a scene where the bird attacks this group of kids that are like driving down the side of the road and drops them from like 1,000 feet, and two of the kids somehow live. That was a fun moment in the movie. But yeah, Bird, what are your thoughts?
So we have a goofy looking giant bird, with a weird, strange tuft of hair and weird teeth. And, people often say it looks like, Beaky Buzzard, the Looney Tunes character, which it totally does.
Yep.
And it has built a nest also. And it's constantly flying in circles, and it's from an antimatter, it's from outer space, from another dimension of antimatter, and that's what this movie's about.
Yeah, I did forget, yeah, you're right, I did forget about the nest, and I also forgot about them shooting at the eggs and killing the
so this movie is insane, and it's one of those movies that I don't understand any decision that was made at all when they made this movie.
So I want to get one of the uncomfortable stupid things that happens in the movie out of the way first, because I feel like the rest of it we can have fun talking about. But I don't know about you, Bird, but did, like, there's a sequence where McAfee and Sally are on a plane. McAfee is smoking, all right, and it's like this extended sequence where he's kind of smoking, and he looks over and he realizes that Sally's asleep, and he takes this moment to put down his cigarette, and this all happens kind of like slow motion almost. That's what it felt like to me. And he leans over and he kisses her, but it's not like a kiss on the cheek or anything. And at no point before this do we have any inclination that they've been romantically involved. It kind of comes out of nowhere. And he, like, the kiss is very extended, and she reaches up right above her and turns on like the airplane light or the seat light right above him, and she realizes that who it is that's kissing her, and that they kind of like linger there for a second, and then there's this weird conversation about how she says he was on first, caught trying to steal second, and
They go on for like 2 minutes about like in weird baseball analogies.
Well, I mean, it's the whole, you know, like, oh, how far did you get with the girl? Well, I got the third base. Like, it's that whole weird thing, but she's telling him what he got caught trying to do. And it's just very rapey and uncomfortable. And then there's this one line where he basically, like, there's like a poem or something that he quotes. And the end of it is something like, be quiet. What was it? Shut up and kiss me or something? I can't remember.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. The end he says, shut up and kiss me.
Yeah, be quiet. It's really uncomfortable. And that's like the one thing about the movie that I get it. It's a different time, but like, it's just very queasy the whole way through. And I wish that scene weren't there, but the rest of it is batshit insane. And it does lean into, it's so bad to me that I can get a lot of enjoyment out of it.
It's crazy. that like everything about this movie is wrong.
Oh yeah, there's nothing good about the movie.
I don't know if this movie, like, I mean, I've definitely seen worse movies, but just it's so insane. Okay, so first of all, they call this thing a battleship more than they call it what it is, which is a bird. We gotta get this out of the way. What's with the narration? This movie has one of the weirdest narrations I've ever heard. Maybe
they saw an early cut of Godzilla Raids Again and were like, you know what? That seems like a good idea.
This narrator who has like a weird like Boston accent, like this narrator so there's a narrator that sounds like Mark Wahlberg or something, and like it's constantly coming in for no reason, and sometimes like it'll even say what the character on screen is saying. Like it'll come and narrate something
There are entire sections of film with people talking where we don't know what they say because the guy's just narrating.
Well, like there'll be a scene with someone like picking up a phone and talking, and the narrator will be like, and he told them to call this person for this, and it's like, why can't we just hear the character say what this guy's saying? Like the narrator just like tells us what the character is saying on the phone instead of just letting us listen to the character. And then, like, it's just, it, I have, like, I have some, a couple quotes here of just, like, some of the random, like, things this narration says. Like, I got this one. Through the centuries, science has made man's lifetime bigger and the world smaller.
That's not even good English. Like, what is that?
And then there's another one that's, like, during a montage of them trying to do something, and the narrator is just babbling on and on. At one point, he says this, which is, like, a fragment, not even, like, a real sentence. But in the middle of this montage, he says, there's people doing well, or there's people doing a job well, efficiently, serious, having fun, doing a job. And I don't know what I don't know what that means. I guess he's trying to tell us that they're having fun but taking it seriously, but I don't know why.
Yeah, I think we learn about the A-bomb attacks. Like, they talk about attacking, and I think we learn that through narration as well.
Does the narrator say that we did nuke the monster at one point?
I heard that they were talking about what didn't work.
And that's what I thought. You would think that even if we did it to, like, kill this thing, like, the detonating nukes would be a bigger deal. No one seems to care. That's another thing.
That's a fundamental difference between, like, the Western monster movies and the Japanese monster movies. It's like, we're just about to nuke everything.
That's kind of, like, no one really cares, like, about anything in this. Like, there's scenes of, like, this crazy destruction, and, like, you'll hear, like, on the radio, how bad things are, and then...
I think they ground all planes and stuff too for a while. Like, they talk about that.
Yeah.
During the
Every time they go back to their characters, they're just like joking around.
Just wanted to get in Sally's pants, dude. That's all he cared about.
But, like, no one ever really seems to care that there's anything going on. It almost makes it seem like the world in general just doesn't care about the giant claw.
But they probably saw it and felt sorry for it. Like, it's just so stupid.
Another scene that's weird is, like, there's a scene where they find its egg and they, like, just shoot it.
Yeah, and they shoot it a couple times and it just starts using it up, and it just ooze and goop coming out of it.
For some reason, the woman goes, I'm from Montana, and grabs the rifle and starts shooting the egg. I don't know what that means. Like, does Montana, is that like a big gun place? I don't know. That's the one time that, like, it's pretty kind of gross. You see all of this yolk and stuff coming out, and then the poor giant claw, he's just... looking at this egg, like, you know, this pile of goo, you know, this is going to be my baby.
for a serious moment, that's actually a missed opportunity for the film, because, like, it kind of comes out of nowhere, and I thought they could have done something with it, like, had the claw react viciously to it, but no, it just kind of, like, does what it does after that. Looks derpy.
The movie is insane, and then I'm still not entirely sure how they defeat the monster. Like, so we get a scene that has this scientist who's only there to explain things, and he's going on and on about how the monster is surrounded. So not only is it from an antimatter planet. He's from another antimatter dimension, and he's surrounded himself with a force field, which is why weapons don't work on him. So the scientist just goes on and on about antimatter and all this nonsense that is, like, barely English. It's just, like, B-movie science words over and over. And I guess the isotope, it has, like... like, the monster, like, absorbs things through osmosis, so the isotope, like, it needs to, like, make... I don't know, we need to have atoms that are, like, smaller than regular atoms that can, like...
yeah,
penetrate his
scientific
force field? I don't even understand it.
Yeah, I mean, all you need to know is the isotope basically stops the shield from working, and then they shoot him down with a plane. Like, that's... and then he falls into the ocean, and its claw comes up, and it's like sinking Terminator 2 style into the lava, but this time with water.
Yeah, and then that...
He does not give a thumbs up, though. That was...
Yeah. And that's the end. And we get some exposition via a character, some European guy named Pierre, who says that it's based on...
I skipped that part because honestly I couldn't say the word.
Lacarcon? Apparently it's a creature from French-Canadian folklore that has the face of a wolf, the body of a woman, and big bird wings. And that's what this character says it is. I don't know what this guy thinks wolves or women look like. but they don't look like the giant claw. And I don't know. I don't think that this is like a actual folkloric creature, because I typed it into Google and I just got giant claw stuff. So I don't know.
that'll do it.
But. I don't know. The movie's insane. And we talked about when he draws the stupid spiral. But first of all, that's insane because, A, he just steals another guy's newspaper and starts drawing on it.
And he does it, like, he actually, like, looks at it, thinks about it, and then takes a newspaper. Like, he was kind of being sneaky about it.
But the thing is, the attacks are in, like, a straight line. But instead of just drawing a straight line, he makes a spiral. And, like, no sane person would do that.
Yeah, it. I don't know.
We get some really dumb and goofy destruction scenes, like when he lands on the Empire State Building and like the top of it falls off, and then when he goes on the UN building and like bends his neck like all the way down and like. He just kind of crashes into, like, he just kind of crashes his head into it really clumsily.
I'm trying to explain what it even looks like, but it's like, when you see, like, those, I don't even know what they're called, like, when the water runs down the side of something and, like, it tilts it so, like, really slowly. It looks like it's in slow motion and, like, very obviously hanging off a string, and it's not even, they're not even trying to conceal that fact. Also, whenever they mention the battleship thing, like right before that happens, when they give you like a, they try to imply the giant claws flying at something, you can't even really see what it is. It's just like a blur on your screen flying back and forth like a fly almost.
I saw someone say it looks like just like a paper bag like floating in the wind.
Yeah, that's probably fairly accurate. And you get that same shot repeated like several times. And then also, we haven't even talked about the extreme close-ups of the monster's face that they do, like, and they do it from this weird angle where it's like it's looking at you confused instead of trying to bite something.
Yeah, it's weirdly for something this stupid, it's weirdly articulated. Like, its nostrils are always flaring, and like, I don't know, it's really just weird. I think also when it's attacking the city, I think it pulls a Gamera and just like crashes into stuff at one point.
Yeah, that sounds right. Hey, Bird, do you think when they were drawing the spiral pattern, the guy just was like, you know what, I really want a Cinnabon right now, and that's what I'm going to draw.
I don't know. Anyone in the world would just connect the dots. I don't know why. I don't know why he does that. The girl even tells him it looks like nonsense. And then he gets like all pouty.
I thought she agreed with him. Maybe I misheard. I mean, this movie is insane. It is. You mentioned a fever dream with like Legend of this movie is a fever dream. It is just like nonsensical stupidity from start to finish.
No, it's crazy. And like, I don't know, the miniatures are just as bad as the puppet. Like, the plane, like, there's a lot of shots of him, like, chasing airplanes, and, like, the plane will have, like, no detail on it. It'll just be, like, there's no, like, symbols or words painted onto it. It's just, like, a solid, like, one color plane. Like, yeah, it's just, like, completely featureless. And yeah, it's just so silly. And then, I mean, I feel bad for the actors. Like, there's the scene that it kind of reminded me of the scene in It when they're, like, looking at the projector. But yeah, there's a similar scene in this where, like, they're like, oh, freeze it on there. And the woman, like, screams, like, terrified. And then we see what they're looking at, and it's this goofy looking, just the silliest looking thing you can imagine. And they're all, like, just scared shitless of it. And it's really just kind of hilarious.
Was there was never an MST3K of this, right?
And I don't this is like the perfect movie.
This is the movie that they need to do.
Like, that show was like made for this movie. And they still haven't done it, which is crazy.
They haven't done a riff track either, have they?
I don't know. There might be a riff tracks. I should look into that, but this movie is the reason that show exists. Basically.
Yeah, I mean, that's all right, so which had worse effects? The one scene in Legends of Tomorrow where they're, like, using the toy soldiers and pushing the Matchbox car down the street? Or the Giant Claw?
I mean, it's basically the same.
It's a tie.
With Legends of Tomorrow, I mean, yeah, that scene where Honda's explaining tokusatsu and all that, like, it had its heart in the right place. It's just whoever did the set design
probably made the Giant Claw.
He probably was like, oh, what's my job for this episode? Replicate a Godzilla set? Okay. And then he watched the Giant Claw instead of like a Tsuburaya movie. So that's why it looks the way it is. It was well-intentioned, but stupid. And this is just like, they're just like, what can we do real cheap? Just slap something together. So I'm going to say the Giant Claw is looking a little more foolish in this instance, just because they just did everything so cheaply that, like, nothing in the movie, like, seems like they spent more than 5 cents on it. It's ridiculous. It's a ridiculous mess of a movie. But believe it or not, I've seen worse B movies from the 50s, and with better effects and some of the decisions that the movie makes being a little different, this would probably be a pretty good movie. But yeah, you just have this bird that is insane, and he flies in a constant, he just flies in circles, and we have to shoot atoms that are smaller than regular atoms at him to disarm an antimatter shield.
It makes sense. It's logical. So the obvious choice for the rating here, Bird, is how many flying battleships?
Oh, yeah. So when we have a movie that we know is bad but is fun anyway, we do the same idea of 1 to 5, but we put a negative in front of it. If you're at, like, 1 star or 0 stars, like, you're pretty much garbage. There's no reason to deal with you. But when you get to negatives and the further away you get from 0, you're a bad movie, but you're a darn fun one. So I would give this one a -3.5.
Man. I think I'm pretty close with you there. This is the perfect movie to watch in a communal setting. And what I mean by that is watching it with a bunch of your friends.
If you're drinkers, play the drinking game and you'll be done in 20 minutes.
So
you'll be dead.
When I watched this, I would say it was a solid 3. If we were watching it with friends, I think you could get this up to like a 4, not just because of the amount of fun you could have.
Like, yeah, I mean, if I was with like you and Trev and we were all watching it like together, like in the same room, this would probably go up to a 4, but
yeah.
But so, yeah, so I'll meet in the middle there at 3.5 for mine. This movie is just insane. Like, every line of dialogue is just pure nonsense. You know who Joe Dante is, correct? The director?
Yeah. Yeah.
Gremlins, The Howling, etc. Have you seen the movie he made called Matinee?
I'm not.
Oh, Matinee's great. It takes place on the eve of the Cuban Missile Crisis, and it's mostly a tribute to William Castle, who was a director. Are you familiar with William Castle?
Nah, bro.
Oh, God, you're making my job real hard.
I know. I have
William Castle made a lot of B-movies, but his thing was gimmicks in the theaters. Like, one of the most famous ones is for a Vincent Price movie called The Tingler, which was about, like, this killer worm that attaches to your spine. And every time...
Dude, I'm sold already. This sounds awesome.
Well, every time the audience, every time the Tingler was on the screen, buzzers would go off in the audience's seats. So, like, he would do stuff like that, like House on Haunted Hill, again, another Vincent Price movie. Like, he would have fake skeletons, like, flying around above the audience in the theater. Anyway, Matinee is Joe Dante's tribute to that, and in Matinee, there's a movie in the movie. The characters go to the movies, and they see a movie called Mant, which is, about a person that turns into a killer ant, and it's like his like goofy parody of like these old 50s B movies, and he lifts whole scenes like word for word from these old B movies for Mant, and one of the movies he takes dialogue straight from is The Giant Claw. And, like, if you watch it, like, the Blu-ray, you can watch Mant by itself, and, like, you're like, oh, someone, like, wrote this as a parody, but, like, most of the dialogue just comes straight from these stupid movies.
Is that a movie worth watching, Matinee?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Matinee is great. It's got John Goodman. It's a really good movie. But, yeah, that's a fun little trivia fact, is The Giant Claw is one of the B movies that... The dialogue was so silly that he just lifted it word for word and didn't even have to write parody dialogue.
That makes a lot of sense, given the dialogue that you represented from just the narration.
Yeah, people having fun, doing a job, having fun.
I'm still laughing about, too, that whole thing where like the giant claw picks up that car full of kids and drops them from 1,000 feet and two of them don't die.
Doesn't the car not even explode until it's, like, midair?
It's midair and it explodes and the kids somehow don't die. I don't... Like, how does that happen?
I don't know. This movie's... It's something.
Well, we obviously had a lot of fun with it, so...
Yeah. No, this was a fun discussion, and I know this is one that, has gotten some requests. So, The Giant Claw is... your Big Bird movie, and it's a turkey. That's why we're reviewing it.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Yeah.
Happy Thanksgiving, Bird, and enjoy your time with your family.
Yeah, this was probably the only Thanksgiving show we'll ever do, so hopefully, I don't know, maybe people just listen to this episode every Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving, and I guess we'll head on out of here.